What's up, everybody? I'm Kara Condi.
I'm Freddie Colway.
Welcome to this week's episode of our mini-series, The Mentorship Sessions.
We really hope you enjoy these chats with inspiring climbers and get to hear about how their mentorship relationships work.
Thanks for watching or listening. This is a podcast. In this episode, we talked to Matt Wright, who is an accomplished climber and climbing coach from the UK, and one of his clients, Seven, who lives in Montana. And it was a really interesting chat. And so we thought we'd introduce a little bit about each of them and then we'll get into it.
Cool. Yeah. So Matt is a super strong climber, maybe one of the best climbers you've never heard of. He grew up in England and now he lives in Scotland. And he's an accomplished all-around climber. So he sent two E11s, which is like the hardest grade on the British climbing scale, basically 14C, 14 plus, and rated R in our trad grading. So difficult and potentially dangerous. He's also sent V15 and 14C sport climbing. Just a few weeks ago, he had a crazy week where he sent two V13s in a week. Super cool. One was a second ascent of a Will Bossy route that we kind of talk about a little bit in the interview. And yeah, he's also really into putting up first ascents. He's established a couple E10 trad lines in the UK.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Seven hasn't been climbing for that long. I think it was only around 6 years. And same with Matt. He had started quite late, honestly, in his life. And so super impressive to have this many accomplishments. And Seven is one of the more interesting people, I think, that I've had the pleasure of talking to. We were able to chat with him for about 20 to 30 minutes before we all hopped on the call. And I was just like mouth open at all of the stories he had. It was really, really cool to get to know him a little bit more and then dive into his and Matt's relationship, because they have a lot in common and have related to each other in ways that they haven't been able to relate to other people in the climbing community, which I think is something that makes their relationship so special and their mentorship relationship so interesting to explore. And so really excited about this chat. I think it was super interesting and yeah, and we're excited to get into it.
We're going.
Cool.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We're super happy to have you guys. And it'd be awesome if both of you guys could like introduce yourself super briefly and like kind of talk about how you know each other.
Yeah, thanks, Kara.
Yeah, you want to take it off, Matt?
Yeah, I don't mind starting. So I'm kind of in a funny position because I'm kind of like a semi-professional climber, whatever you want to call it. And I'm also a professional coach as well. So most of my time, I would say it's kind of split 50-50 between professional climbing and coaching. And Seven is one of my top guys. I've been coaching him for, I mean, it must be coming up for it. What is it, like a year now, Seven?
A year and a couple of months, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And it's been an exciting year as well. Like, I've learned so much from working with Seven. And interestingly, I actually had a conversation with a really experienced coach called Ian Dunn not so long ago. And I asked him just kind of a little bit about his own coaching. He said that one thing he's always found, that a good coaching relationship is really effective when you both learn from each other. And that's something that me and Seven, I think, have absolutely mastered. You know, I've learned so much about climbing, training, coaching, mindset, and also just like improving life habits through just talking to Seven on a daily basis, pretty much.
I can see that. I feel like in the little 15-minute conversation we just had with Seven, I feel like I learned some life lessons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Seven's he's just like multi-diverse. He's had a very back and forth kind of life, if you don't mind me saying that, Seven. I mean, and I think it's just really kind of just made you like such a brilliant all-round kind of guy.
Now I'm going to blush.
And then just a little bit more about you, Matt. Where are you from and like how long have you been climbing and stuff?
Yeah, so I'm originally from just north of Birmingham, which is a pretty kind of, it's an industrial city in the UK. I'm from very much a working class background. In fact, actually kind of below that, I grew up on a council estate, which is really uncommon for British climbers. Most people are from quite well off backgrounds. And I think because of that, I've had my troubles. You know, I've definitely found it very hard to fit into the climbing world just with just generally how I've just found the scene is often kind of like I mean, like, I don't want to kind of make it too much about class, but I've often found that like people from more well-off backgrounds seem to stick together, and then I've kind of always felt like a mega outcast, to be quite honest, which has ultimately led to me moving to Scotland, which, yeah, like, I mean, I think I've just always enjoyed doing my own kind of thing, which ultimately meant that I've taken a slightly different approach to my climbing. But I did start climbing 9 years ago, and, or I think around 9 years ago, and just within a few months, I was instantly like, wow, I want to be a professional climber one day. And yeah, my dad kind of told me straight away, he was like, that ain't going to happen. You're going to get a proper job, basically. And I was just like, well, man, I've only known you for a few years, so I'm going to go and take it my own direction. So I did, and I was on a mission to kind of prove my dad wrong. And, you know, I loved climbing ever since. And it's just taken, you know, everything that my life is just purely about climbing. And yeah, I just love it.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then my name's Seven. I'm originally from like upstate New York, from Rochester. I moved around quite a bit, and then got into climbing a little over 6 years ago. I actually started on Valentine's Day. My girlfriend got me a pair of shoes because she was tired of me bothering her. So she's like, got a couples membership at the gym. And then she's like, I think you'd really enjoy this. And my dad, he was a lifetime climber. Like, he just stopped climbing like 2 years ago. And he was climbing back in the 70s. His dad was a park ranger in Yosemite. So I kind of knew about it. The series knew, I've like watched Masters of Stone as a little kid. And, he was really, really into it, but I was really into team sports, like playing baseball, and then like gotten into wrestling, and then lacrosse, eventually to that. So when I started getting into climbing, it just kind of took over my entire life, in a good way though, you know? So it's like spending like 5 days a week, 6 days a week outside climbing, by myself, mainly because just finding partners access, it was hard, but it was just something about being in the forest and like doing stuff that was like challenging for me, both mentally and physically, like really appealed. And like the location of these places was like huge on of like reasons to continue.
Yeah, I think something I just kind of wanted to almost speak for Seven just for a moment. And I think something that made Seven's journey so amazing is that you started climbing. It was it 27 or 28 years old, Seven?
It was in 2018 on Valentine's Day, but my birthday's June 3rd. So I was almost 28 at that point. So yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that you're currently trying a V14, that is just amazing in my opinion. I think like it's almost unheard of that people start climbing that late and get as good as what Seven is at the moment. And I think that's purely down to determination.
Maybe a bit of neurosis as well.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started, Matt? Because you said you started 9 years ago.
Yeah, so I was 16 when I started, which I think I would have started much younger, but because of just the financial situation of my family, I wasn't able to start climbing until much later on. My dad was in the army, and basically I got kicked out of my mom's when I was 13, moved in with my dad, and then he lives in South Wales, which is an area that's got a load of sandstone quarries. So I just started soloing in these quarries when I was 16, and then ultimately that just led to I just loved it. And like straight away I knew that I was gonna take it as far as I possibly could, and that was it grabbed me straight away.
That's awesome. I feel like we'll come back to this, but I can already kind of see some threads in both of your stories of why you might connect with each other, and similar backgrounds and maybe similar kind of initial days climbing just out almost alone, but appreciating the locations where you were and just kind of having a passion for it that you couldn't ignore. So that's cool.
Yeah, I actually think Seven's one of the few climbers really that I've truly related to in all honesty. And yeah, I've honestly, I think it's brought us like very, very close. And even if I wasn't Seven's coach, I would still say he's one of my best friends. Like, yeah. Seriously, I chat to him every day, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. So, yeah, how did you guys connect? How did you guys meet and get started as yeah, coaching and all that stuff.
Okay. So being obsessed with climbing, I, you know, went through the whole media rabbit hole and pretty much finished YouTube in terms of YouTube climbing related content. So I was watching Catalyst Climbing a lot with like Louis Parkinson because I was coaching at the time, the youth comp team over here in Whitefish. And I just wanted to learn as much as I could to be able to like pass on like the information to these kids that are just as psyched as I am. And I saw Matt Wright on that video with Louis Parkinson's. I think it came out in November of last year. And it was, he did this heel hook on this yellow problem that like, I like to watch the beta videos and like kind of try to pick the movements before the climbers will do them to see like if I can like get a little bit of intuition of like just body position and like how to move. And he threw up a right heel hook on this curved like weird volume and then like rocked over it to get like a high left hand, and then like he stood up on off that heel. And I was like, I never even like thought of that. That was like amazing. And then like he was like, I was like, how are you going to switch the foot to a toe? And even Louis, I think, was like, oh yeah, how are you going to switch the foot to a toe? But he like stood all the way up on this heel and then just reached the left foot out and then didn't have to switch it to a toe because he had already like extended fully into this next hold. And I'm like, where did you get this movement? Like, where, what goes through your brain to think that that's the way to go through this sequence? I'm like, that guy's interesting. And then I found out later that he was coaching and I was like, you know, I think he's got the same mind. Like, I would really like to just pick his brain and analyze like why he does things as well as like his opinion on like just overall climbing and just like movement in general. Cause I spend a lot of time thinking about beta and like angles and moves. And I'm just kind of like, that's how my brain works. So to not be able to see something at all and then just him execute it and execute it perfectly, I was just like, oh, okay, so let's look into this coaching thing. Like, that might be pretty interesting. Wonder what this guy's about.
Wow, that's really interesting you say that, Seven, because like it's the reason why that's interesting is because I do exactly that myself. I try to like anticipate everybody's climbing as it's happening, and I think it's such a good way to learn, honestly. I really, really do. I think it's probably the best way to learn you know, movement especially.
Yeah, there's reasons why people do things.
I have a theory actually that I'm curious about your guys' opinions on that. So I started climbing younger. I was 10, and you know, you're not as intellectual as a 10-year-old typically. Yeah. As you know, 16 or 28-year-olds are. And I think people who started climbing later in life tend to actually have a better understanding of movement and are able to verbalize it better, actually, is what I kind of mean. Because a lot of what I end up doing is really intuitive, like kind of like that intuition you were talking about, like trying to guess what people are going to do. Like half the time, if I do something, I have a really hard time telling you even what I did. So you'll be like, oh, did you, you know, go left hand to that hold? And I'll say, no, I went right hand. And then I look at a video and I actually went left hand. I'm like, did I really? Like, I don't remember doing that. But I find that like a lot of the people who I've found make really good coaches started when they were a little later because they actually were thinking about the movements they were doing a lot. So I'm just curious what you guys think about that.
Oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that, but I can totally see why you're right there, because yeah, I have seen other coaches as well, and like just kind of reviewed what they do, and I've noticed a lot of coaches really stay away from technique and mental training. And I've always wondered why, because I guess it's quite hard to remotely coach that, but yeah, I guess you're probably right in that, like, if you've started climbing at a later date, you're able to pull it into words a little bit easier, maybe.
Yeah, and then like something that I've noticed, at least with some of the kids on our team, was they're just climbing all the time, and they're climbing everything, and they're not giving it as much thought as we'd like them to be, but like they're just psyched and they're doing it. So they're getting that repetition in the hours of movement. And I like to think of moves that like, it's like a Rolodex that you can like pick from, and you're like, oh, okay, well, if you've done that move in 100 different variations or 1,000 or 10,000 different variations, then your body just like knows it. And then you're like, you look in that zone and you're like, oh, that's where I need to be to go into the next place. And you don't really have to give it as much thought because you're just repeating a movement that you've already ingrained.
Yeah.
So like then if you're doing a lot of that as a kid, then as you get older, then you're just doing what feels right. You're like, oh, well, why did you do it? It's like, well, put my heel there because it was there and I could put a heel on it. And then it gets me. I'm like, oh, well, I put a heel there because then I could like rock up into it and try to get my hips over the foot. And like there's like a little bit more thought process into it. But I really think it has to do with maybe just time, like mind emotion, like time.
Interestingly, an exercise that I give to all of my clients pretty much is what is essentially arc training, but I call it continuity just because my first coach also called it continuity. And the reason why I give this exercise, it's often like capillary training to help improve the blood flow to your forearm, but I actually don't provide it for that. The reason why I provide continuity or arc training to clients is actually to do exactly what Seven's explaining there, just to provide a lot of time on the wall, doing loads of different moves and to play around. And you know, a lot of it, I think, is just learning how to relax on the wall, because you're often, you know, whilst bouldering and things like that, you're often, you know, trying to try your hardest, you know, go at your limit. But I mean, there's two contrasts with climbing. I think you've got to be able to relax and you've got to be able to stay focused, but you've also got the other side of being able to try really, really hard. And I think that's something that most people really neglect. But obviously there's the movement aspect as well, which like what Seven's talking about, if you do moves hundreds of times, it just becomes intuition. It becomes, you know, like almost instinctive for you to be able to pull that move off without even having to really think about what you're doing.
Totally. Yeah, I think that all makes a lot of sense. And kind of as you guys were saying, like, I don't know, people who come to climbing later too, maybe they've got other stuff going on. Like you were saying, they're not just climbing constantly as when they're, you know, as kids do, I guess. So they're maybe being a little more intentional too about how their thought process and how they're approaching their climbing, because sorry, they just literally don't have as much time to ingrain those movements, like movement patterns and all of that. So it takes a little more, I don't know, strategy potentially.
Yeah, Matt, you just mentioned you had a coach. When was that when you had a coach, when you started climbing? Because we kind of the point of these, or like the background idea, which we didn't actually introduce at the beginning of this, that like Freddie came to me with this plan, is that, you know, climbing obviously has this huge mentorship aspect. And so I guess, did you have a mentor when you started back in, when you were 16, or like, when did you get one? And then same with you, Seven. And, you know, then how did Matt then become that mentor for you in the last year?
So I think for me, my first real mentor was probably a climber in South Wales. He's completely unheard of, called Simon Rawlinson. And I mean, he's well known in South Wales for good reason. He's an absolute legend and he's put up a lot of the hardest routes in that area. But if I mentioned him to you guys, or maybe anyone in the scene that might not really know who he is, he actually has coached quite a few really successful athletes that are now on the GB team. But interestingly, I never really got a chance to meet Simon because I never went indoors. I was always outside. But I did see some videos of him online, and that is where I would say I learned about hard climbing and what it was all about. But then when I ended up moving away from South Wales back in my mum when I was 18, and then that led to me starting to climb in the Peak District, which is where I just kind of started to understand what the UK scene was about. And then a lot of people mentioned Dave Mason, and Kyra, do you know who Dave Mason is?
I've definitely heard of him. Yeah.
Well, Dave Mason taught me how to train. And one thing that I really have to credit Dave on this, he knows training really, really well. He answered all my questions and essentially just taught me how to structure training, how to manage it around being an athlete, and, you know, how to, you know, peak your performance around a particular goal that you've got. And yeah, I honestly think if I'd have started coaching before that, I think I wouldn't have been a very good coach. So, you know, a lot of what I've learned has probably come from Dave Mason originally, and I've kind of just built on that.
And then I had some people that I climbed with pretty regularly, maybe like once or twice a week. But it was mainly on just things that like they found exciting, because I'm pretty conforming when it comes to things like that. If I'm in a group, I'm like, well, I'll go by myself if it's really is that important to me. If they're not psyched on it, then I'll go to something that they're psyched on, just because then it's like, I'm going to have fun regardless. So I've been kind of just running around like a chicken with my head cut off and climbing as much as possible and not really taking the training aspect as seriously as I wanted to be. And then I had heard of Matt after like that video with Louis. I did some, you know, research and went on the internet and kind of found out like where his progression was, because he like progressed really, really quickly in the sport. And I was curious on like how he came about that. And then kind of seemed like he took the off the wall training way more seriously than I did, especially at that time. So it kind of seemed like I was looking for someone that was excited to try hard and possibly potentially not even do anything, and then to be able to just converse about beta and reasons why things are possible and reasons why things aren't, and then like to be able to introduce some strength training into my life, because I like owned a Metolius plastic hangboard, but it has more dust than I ever put onto it. So it just kind of like one of those things that it just didn't really excite me. And I hadn't built my spray wall yet, so I was really just looking for someone that I could actually go and like converse about hard climbing with.
It's interesting you say that, actually, Seven, that I took the off the wall training more seriously, because interestingly, I comparing myself to like other athletes that I know of, I've probably done the least amount of training. You know, I for some reason I've just always felt like it was just a little bit unnecessary, the amount of training that people do. And you know, quite often when you watch climbers, you can see almost instantly that they've got areas in their mental and technical performance where they could, you know, really fine tune that and get far quicker progress than what they would for, you know, their obsessive fingerboard stats. And I've noticed this really, really early on in climbing. And interestingly, I kind of stayed away from training until I hired Dave Mason as a coach. And I don't think I actually made much progress in my climbing so much whilst working with Dave. Like I did definitely get a little bit stronger, but I think, to be honest, I was doing too much training, even with Dave providing the training for me. And since then, I've dialed it back a lot. And I kind of actually didn't do any training for years after working with Dave. And then I kind of had some personal stuff going on. I was living in a van, and unfortunately, I was having some stuff going on where people were trying to ruin my reputation. It really got to my head. And then, what's it called? I ended up ultimately just kind of, things started going downhill for a little bit. And then I was just like, okay, right, enough's enough. I need to stop letting this affect me, and I'm going to sort my life out. So I kind of got on it with the coaching, got a house in Scotland, and then I started training properly this year, I would say, like from October. I've been training more consistently, and interestingly, I've really had some quite amazing results, and I think I'm now climbing harder than I ever have before. But the interesting thing is I'm still not doing a lot of training. I'm only doing maybe 8 exercises, and I'm just kind of rotating between them and progressively overloading. I would say I feel it's only taken a small amount of like my overall energy, and I'm able to still climb outside. You know, I'm climbing outside 4 or 5 days a week, but my training is literally just an hour warming up before I go to the crag. And I found that that is absolutely the best way for me to train, and it works really well for me. So
it's really well for me as well.
Yeah, like I mean, me and you have been talking about it a fair bit, haven't we, Seven?
Yeah, it's super interesting, because I didn't, there was a long time when I didn't have a coach when I was pretty young. And I actually went like the opposite route of the thing I knew how to do was get stronger. And so I felt like I was actually doing a lot of, not off the wall training, but a lot of like climbing training, you know, hangboarding, campusing, 4x4s, power endurance, that type of thing. Because that's like, I didn't have anybody to watch me climb and give me feedback or anything. And so like, that was the easiest thing that I could do to feel like I was like progressing my climbing. And so I kind of went a different route instead of like just climbing to get better at climbing. I was doing so much training because that was like something within my control that I could do without somebody telling me how to do it, I guess. So I kind of had a different experience, but for kind of similar reasons, I guess. But you guys actually both mentioned something that I think Freddie had cool thoughts on, where you guys both mentioned that you learned a lot from videos early on in your climbing. And Freddie, you had like an interesting perspective on that, of how like men versus women tend to like get mentored originally in climbing.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys will think about this, but I have heard from a lot of men that they didn't necessarily have like a personal, like in their life, mentor right away when they started climbing, and it was pretty self-directed, like self-taught, looking to videos or reading books, or really being inspired to progress their climbing, but not having somebody in their physical presence to kind of teach them or offer mentorship. Whereas I think for women, it's, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but it's more common that they might have like a boyfriend or a romantic partner who offers mentorship, and it's not always like a perfect system, but there is somebody who wants to teach and kind of bring them up in the sport. And I think women sometimes have an easier time asking for help and like, yeah, I don't know, taking on that role of being taught. And so it's an imperfect model as well, potentially, but that women sometimes have an easier time accessing mentorship, whereas I've heard from a lot of guys that they wish they had had a stronger mentor figure, but they ended up doing a lot of like self-teaching.
Yeah, I'd say when I first started, I had a friend that used to go out with me quite a bit, but he was kind of like more just like to hang out and like maybe like try something once or twice, and then like, you know, that was the day, and I was like, oh, this is really fun. Like he brought me out to my first leading, like on a rope, and like that kind of whole experience, and like taught me how to build an anchor and then wrap down. And then he was like, go online, you can learn anything you want on YouTube. And I was like, he's like, if you want to do it, somebody else is already doing it to an elite level, and they have all their videos online. So like, just, he's like, you can learn to fix a truck by YouTube videos. He's like, just go figure out how your system, figure out how you want it, and then we'll link back up in a couple weeks and we'll go climbing again. And then he actually moved to Iowa. So it's kind of like one of those things that it didn't last long, but it was fun when I had it. And then like some of the people around here, they like are really excited. They want to like go and try these hard things. But then it's like, as soon as they get onto it, then they're immediately deflated, because it's like, I tend to think I like to try really hard and actually try to learn something and like try to overcome challenges and just progress as a person and as a climber. And it's kind of hard to find that similar mindset in such a large area. And most people are like just content with how they perceive climbing, which is fine. I just, it's been nice to actually have like somebody that has this kind of similar goals, even if he's doing it at such a higher level than I am.
Talking about Matt there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, it kind of swings both ways as well, Seven. Like, I'm really inspired by what you do as well. So, you know, like, I'm quite often, you know, if I'm having a bad day on my project or something, I sometimes think, like, what would Seven do in this situation? And the answer is probably just probably not be as quite so reactive, because, like, I mean, Seven's probably a little bit more patient than I am to some degree. And I think I've learned a lot of that from him. And then I think the flip side to that is I've maybe taught Seven how to be a little bit more, maybe a little bit more forceful with climbing. I don't know if that's true, Seven, but
yeah.
Yeah. And
I tend to have like a lot of little projects, and then we'll like try to piece off bits of them as I go. And then he's kind of like, oh, you know, should really, like, you're close on this one, you should just put your head down and see how far you can get. And it's been a fun transition.
Yeah, whereas I think I sometimes probably am way too stubborn and spend too much time on things, and ultimately end up sometimes getting, you know, maybe like a little bit bummed out, like when I've put like 30 sessions into something and I've not like made maybe quite the progress that I want or something like that. But yeah, since training, that has changed a lot, actually. I've not had that happen for quite a long time. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Going back to Freddie's question regarding like mentorship, and obviously I don't want to talk on behalf of ladies, because I you know, without from my perspective of seeing like ladies at the crag and stuff, I do think they probably have it quite a bit harder than blokes to some degree, because I think, you know, like you do often see that, like, I do seriously think that, like, society is still, like, a little bit on the kind of misogynistic side, and I think people haven't come quite as far forward as they might think sometimes. I don't really know where I'm going with that, but it's just something I've kind of seen, and a lot of, like, male mentors that are mentoring women are quite often very patronizing, and, you know, at least in the UK anyway, and I do find it quite shocking sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like that was my experience a lot of times, especially being, like, a strong, motivated, like, 11-year-old at the gym. I'm sure I was annoying on top of that, but, like, you know, most of the people climbing in the gym were, you know, like, these 20 to 28-year-old guys, you know? And so I feel like it was also just hard to find, at least when I was young, it was hard to find somebody who I related to, because just a lot of the people who were climbers at that time were, like, you know, older guys. And so there was, like, it was really hard to relate to young girls. And I feel like, you know, you have experience as a youth coach too, Seven. I'm curious how you've approached, like, mentoring, you know, younger kids, and like, navigating the challenges of, like, yeah, not understanding, like, especially, like, the young experience of, like, young women and stuff like that. I'm sure that there's been challenges there.
Yeah, there has been a lot of challenges. It's kind of, I just wanted them to, like, have fun. On, like, the basis of it was, like, if they weren't enjoying what they were doing, we immediately, like, stopped and, like, moved on to something else that they could, like, follow that psych with. So in terms of, like, the females, there was like, four girls that were in similar age categories, and they're all kind of, like, you know, this similar range of difficulty in what they're climbing, but they all, like, fed off each other. And, like, I've just kind of promoted that girls group to, like, kind of do their thing, and then I would, like, interject if they were, like, trying, like, a beta that wasn't gonna, like, be as positive or as easy for, like, some of them. And then the men kind of had their own thing, but then they would, like, kind of mix between each other. So it really wasn't, I just kind of promoted an inclusive environment for them, but kind of also let them go their own way with it. I would say one of the harder ones was the size differences in the kids. One of the previous coaches had, like, given them a lot of excuses, like, oh, you can't reach that hold, so, like, you just can't do that one. It's okay. It's just not meant for you. And I'm like, well, you know, this kid climbs, like, B7 crimps. Has he tried using the foothold to, like, make it past? And then he, like, opened his mind of, like, wow, it's only a foothold because they intended you to use it as a foot, but it also could be a handhold. So if he just thought of the problem as, these are holds that I could use, he started finding a lot of things that he was to stand out on by using the feet that people chose. And we're like, see, there's your superpower. Your superpower is everything's a hold. The only person that makes the designation is you, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, like, a kind of, like, a rough one to push back band when, like, you're being fed reasons why you can't do something based off of, like, sharing the space to, like, figure out how you can, or, like, how things are possible. You might not be able to do it the same way as the other people, but there might be a way that you personally could do it. So I try to, like, really promote that they go off each other and try to, like, figure out their own individual ways through things.
Something that I found interesting about what you said there, Seven, is about superpowers. And I don't really know where I'm going to go with this, but I've often, you know, when I hire new clients and stuff, I do try to highlight to them, like, you know, everyone has their superpowers. And I know that kind of sounds cliche, but it really is true that if you take a good long, you know, a good look at your own climbing performance, pretty much everybody has something that sets them apart from other people. And I think the interesting thing is people often focus very, very strongly on their weaknesses. And it's often taught, like, immediately when people start climbing, is, like, you know, train your weaknesses. But I actually think you should only focus on your relevant weaknesses. You know, if there are weaknesses, you should only focus on the ones that are relevant to your goals. And, you know, like, you should really be focusing on your strengths if you want to climb at your limit, because, you know, at the end of the day, the best climbers in the world aren't the ones that are, you know, if you're super strong in the fingers, then you're not going to want to go for, like, some, like, big roof kind of sloper holds. Kind of, you know, I don't know, Big Island style thing, if that's not your style, you're gonna go for something like in Magic Wood where there's little holes that you can bone down on or whatever it might end up being. And people only ever climb at the limit when they focus on the strengths and the superpowers. So yeah, I do think that's really good, just highlighting to the kids early on that, like, yeah, I mean, you can do it. You just need to believe you can.
Yeah.
And figure out the way that works for you. Yeah.
And adults, honestly, like I've had this conversation with my roommate, Jesse Grouper, who he went to the Olympics in Paris. And, you know, it's so easy, especially when you're highly motivated, to want to focus on those weaknesses, like you were saying, Matt.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it seems like it's low hanging fruit of something to get better at. And as being like motivated people, it's something it's easy to want to get better at the things that you're bad at. But then when you do that too much, you kind of lose sight of those things that you're really good at. And so I use the same word, superpower, actually. I've talked about it a lot
Yeah,
before.
cool.
So that's super cool to hear you guys like kind of bring up that
Yeah.
same thing. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Because I think identifying your superpower is really important and powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I guess from your point, Kyra, it must have been so challenging for you, being an athlete with was it scoliosis that you had and you got for your spine? I mean, like
Yeah.
you must have, I mean, obviously, like you're renowned for having crazy strong fingers. Crazy, just being crazy strong and, renowned for all sorts of amazing skills. But obviously, I mean, for you in particular, it must have been quite interesting because did you naturally already have strong fingers and then you've just built on that?
Oh man, it's a hard question. I think when I've always talked about my superpower, I actually have gone more towards the mental side. And I think my superpower tends to be being nice to myself. Like, I think, you know, if I fail on a boulder, I don't like really internalize that failure and blame myself for it. I think I have a really good shake it off kind of attitude, I guess. And I think that's let me gain a lot of success because I have that like shake it off, but also still the motivation to want to do it. So I think some people fall into the trap where they're too nice to them, not too nice to themselves. That's I don't want to say that, but where they fall into the trap of giving themselves too many excuses and then, you know, not trying hard. But I feel like I'm nice to myself, but then still try really hard. And that balance is a tricky one that I think I'm naturally quite good at. And that's allowed me to like find a lot of success. And then, you know, lean into the strength superpowers that, because I think everybody has one and the other, you know, like a mental superpower as well as a physical one.
So this is a slightly personal question, but I have this kind of analogy with climbers that their biggest strength is their biggest weakness, and their biggest weakness is often the biggest strength in some respects. And I know it sounds super weird, but like obviously you're gonna have had so many ex like having a few spine is a great excuse, like and but you it sounds like you've never used that as an excuse, and maybe that shaped the way that you approach your climbing. You know, even though it might on paper seem like the biggest weakness, maybe the flip side to that is that it's kind of been the driving force for everything.
No, that's actually a great point. Yeah. I definitely use it as an excuse of not being able to do a move a certain way. But then I've tried to flip that narrative to be like, okay, I can't do it that way. How can I do it? And so I guess you're right in that I use that like knowledge of a way that I can't do something in order to like so that weakness, I guess, in order to find a way that I can do it and use my strengths. So like kind of using that weakness to
Wow,
not identify, but just kind of guide my way towards back to my strengths, I guess,
it's
or
just
something.
amazing. I was so impressed when I heard that you were in the Olympics with a few spine. I was just like, how is that even a thing? Like, it's just amazing. Yeah.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm curious what you guys think your superpowers are. I think you've kind of mentioned how much you've collectively like kind of mentored each other on certain things that you're each good at. And so I feel like this is a question I've asked people on the US team and stuff too before, like what they think their superpower is. And it's always interesting.
I almost feel like we'll be able to answer it better for each other at this point.
You could do that too. Yeah, whichever.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested to see what Seven says first, actually.
Okay, so I would say for me, like deep lock-offs, like anywhere where I'm coming from, like here, and then bringing it past my chest and into the plane of like a pull to a push. And pretty much anything where I can get some sort of weird bicycle, toe hook, heel hook compression between my legs. Like if I can get my legs locked in on something, I feel like then I have like a higher success rate. Where like a lot of people will climb like front on and kind of board style and snappy and springy. I'm like the guy that will do 5 foot moves to try to find some obscure like toe scum up high to like do a bump move. So it's just kind of like, yeah, I would say lower body compression would probably be my go-to.
What I find interesting about that Seven is obviously like because Seven started climbing a little bit later, naturally his fingers would have taken longer to catch up. And it's almost like, again, like going back to like the biggest weakness being your biggest strength is like Seven's almost used the fact that he would have had weaker fingers initially to discover a new method of climbing, which ultimately has shaped the way that he now approaches climbing.
Yeah, interesting.
Totally. What do you think your biggest like mental superpower is then, Seven?
Positivity, being able to show up and be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna try this thing again. Like I had like 4 days of trying to move a certain way and then finally like figured out a different way to try it. And I was like, oh, I hit this slot like one time out of like the 100 times that I tried it just today. I'm like, so I can maybe bring that up to where I can hit the slot like 20% of the time, or like 40% of the time, or maybe like half the time. And then like 6 days go by of me already being able to do all the moves and then like just trying to do these two low percentage things like back to back. And it was kind of almost a little disheartening, but anytime I put my pads on, it was more of like getting to the parking area. Well, that was the hard part. And then like I get to the parking area and I like open the door and like I smell the air and in the woods and I'm like, okay, I actually love this and I want to be here right now and this is beautiful and I'm just gonna put my stuff on and get to the boulder. That's the next goal. And then just like, yeah, the positivity of just like, yeah, it'll work out as long as I keep putting in the effort that's necessary to learn what I need to learn.
Yeah, I mean,
I
just
love that.
brilliant.
Yeah.
What about you, Matt? Go for it.
Your superpower.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, I think to be honest, my strength probably is ambition, I would say. Like I've never looked at a climb and thought I'm never going to be able to do that. Like it doesn't matter how hard it is. It could be 9C, it could be 9C plus. I'll look at it and I view it more as time, as an investment of time, as opposed to a challenge that I think is possible or impossible. And like I guess I kind of view it like there's routes everywhere all over the UK that I want to do that people would have told me there's no way you'll ever do that. And I just viewed it as like, well, why can't I do that? And there's no real answer for that. I think it's like you've just got to turn up, put the time in, you've got to be willing to put the work in, and ultimately that, you're in control of what you do, and that's the way I've always kind of viewed climbing, is that it's in my control, providing I'm willing to put the time in. So yeah, I think ambition is definitely something that has really, really shaped the way that I've approached climbing. Like so we would say that's a mental skill, but then like let's say like a physical skill, I would say, oh, it's always a hard one, isn't it, to kind of blow your own trumpet when you're but yeah, I mean, I think the majority of my skills are mental, to be quite honest. I would say like physically, I've always felt like I was held back by that, and that's slowly catching up, which has meant at the moment I'm a little bit like disillusioned with where I'm at in terms of my physical ability. But yeah, I'd say probably, I think I'm quite good at contorted moves. So like big drop knees, big weird fast movement. I climb very fast. That's my style, and I think with that, it's very efficient. I'm really highly focused on the technical side of climbing, and I really think I've maximized that to some degree. You can't fully maximize it. No one can fully maximize it. You're always going to make mistakes, but I feel like I've really, really focused on that, and that ultimately has been very rewarding.
I feel like you guys both mentioned like kind of wizardry, and it makes me think of Dave Graham. Do you guys ever watch videos
Yep.
of him? And I feel like he uses a lot of like technique and foot moves and stuff to get around
Yeah.
those kind of like snappy moves or something like that. But that reminds me of him.
I think interestingly, one thing I've realized a lot about climbers is that they're very they're very like uncomfortable with what they can't see. Climbers are very obsessive and very analytical in general, and if they can't physically like measure or kind of see how something would be beneficial, they almost like don't want to put the effort in. Whereas one thing I've kind of realized is like as I've become a better climber is that it's so you like until your mind is at a certain place, it's hard to imagine how you could take that further. But it's only when you look back that you realize like the progress that you've made. And I really do think that perseverance with your mind and how you approach, you know, technique and how you psychologically approach your climbing is something that can almost always be fed into.
Totally. Yeah. You mentioned before that other coaches that you're familiar with, I guess, kind of shy away from mental training and that kind of side of coaching, I guess. And I don't know, some of the routes you've done are, in my opinion, very impressive in the mental side of what it took. Some of these, really hard trad lines in the UK. And I'm curious, I guess we can talk about with Seven too, but also just in other coaching clients, if it's more applicable. Do you work with your clients on the mental side of that and some of those things that are harder to measure, as you were saying, or maybe harder for climbers to tap into wanting to work on the mental side of their climbing, I guess?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Honestly, yes, I do focus on the mental side and technical side. I'd say I probably focus on that probably a bit more than the physical side, despite the fact that it's all integrated into a physical training plan. One thing that I've found is that some people are easier to coach than others when it comes to this, and I think like my coaching style is very holistic. It's quite holistic, so I think for some people, they find that maybe just a little bit too. I think just like they're not comfortable with that almost. I've kind of seen that with people. And I think some people are almost impossible to coach in that style. So, you know, some people I'll only coach for a few months and it would just be like, well, this clearly isn't working. Whereas, you know, the people that I do click with, so people like Seven, you know, coaching for a long time and, you know, Seven's been great at being able to, you know, talk about the mental and technical side of climbing with. And like I think one of the main things that I talk about with my clients is visualization. Because visualization is essentially a way of doubling, tripling, you know, quadrupling your climbing experience if you're willing to spend that time doing it. You know, if you can climb a climb once, but you can visualize it as many times as you want. And if you visualize it enough, you can learn just so much. You know, quite often, I mean, I'm trying a 9A at the moment, which is 514D. And, you know, quite often the learning that I'm doing is actually when I'm at home, I'll visualize it and I'll sit there and think about things and I'll be like, oh, hey, hang on, that doesn't quite make sense. I'm doing like 3 foot moves there, but if I just get my foot up on the higher one, I'll save those 2 extra foot moves. So therefore I can climb that bit more efficiently. And, you know, I'll keep reflecting on it, keep reflecting it over and over and over again until it comes the perfect almost you know, like memory of that climb. And then ultimately things end up becoming a lot easier as a result.
Yeah, cool.
Have you found that helpful, Seven, in your own climbing too, with that advice from Matt?
I was really big into visualization prior to meeting up with Matt, and it helps me a lot in climbing. Just having the area next to me and having a lot of first ascent possibilities, I have to learn the beta to be able to do the thing. So I'll like kind of focus on one thing, and then I'll be like, okay, well, I arrived at this midway point way more pumped than I need to be able to recover from this rest. So I would video it, bring it to the house, and I'd watch it, and then I would like close my eyes and attempt to be there. And then when I'm there, I would notice things to the sides of me that could be different possibilities, like, oh, there's like a vertical face off to the left, like an edge that I can maybe get a drop knee in on, or oh, maybe at this crack feature, instead of leaning back on it, I can come into it. And like I'll go through these things and I'll try these moves before I go and try the moves in and physically. So it worked really, really well with me. So when we started talking about it, like just in chat while we were working together, that it worked. It was one of the things we shared in common.
Yeah, I think interestingly, one thing about Seven is actually probably being one of the most challenging people to coach because he's so good and because we share so many qualities. And I think because of that, that's why I've learned so much from working with Seven, because we've almost explored different rabbit holes together that we wouldn't have maybe thought about otherwise. So I think that's what's been really, really cool.
That is sweet. I really like video analysis. I've always videoed a bunch of things from climbing alone a lot. Like, you don't have somebody there to point out, you know, subtle differences between doing a move and not doing a move. So I know I have one move that I tried, I think, you know, over 200 sessions on a spray wall. I have like a video of like an attempt at least every single day. And it's like, even looking at it though, I can't tell what I did differently when I actually sent it. But I think it helps so much just to even tell you what's possible. So like, you know, watching those videos of that move, I was able to be like, okay, I'm close. Like, I know I can do this move, even though I've tried it 200 plus times, you know, like, and I talked to my sports psych actually about that a while ago. I was like, why do I watch videos of myself, like sending things, like, you know, you send something and then you take a video of it and you immediately want to rewatch it. And she mentioned that it can be a way to like kind of ingrain mentally that you have gotten better. Cause like a lot of times you have like, you know, some sort of level that you assume of yourself. And then when you do something that's above that level, you have to like, you've now raised the level of what you assume is possible. And so watching videos of yourself and things like that can like re ingrain that, I guess. Didn't say that perfectly, but like, if that makes sense.
Just to add on that as well, I feel like video analysis is brilliant because it's almost like, it's almost like a bit of like realization of like, oh, actually, like I climbed that really well. And because the thing is with climbing is you're always trying so hard that like it never feels like you're actually getting better. It's almost as if like sometimes you can almost like gaslight yourself into thinking like, oh, I'm not getting any better. But it's like, again, it's only when you look back and you watch videos of yourself and stuff that you can be like, oh, wow, I am moving so much better. Or, you know, because grades, like when you start pushing the grades, it's like you might get a new grade every 2 years or maybe even every 3 years or something crazy like that. So grades aren't enough to satisfy our, you know, self-esteem, ego, whatever you want to call it. So I do think video analysis almost can just tick those boxes in a much more authentic and much more like healthy way.
I also like repeating the boulder and getting it on video in two different times during my life. Like one of the first V6s I did out in Leavenworth, I remember doing it, and then I did it 2 years ago previously, just as like it was on the same boulder as some other things that I wanted to work on, and I repeated it, and then like I went through and I was like, oh, that is hilarious, like the difference of how I climbed it. I'm like, there's no doubt in my mind that I've gotten better in the past couple years since that and where I am now. And even like with some of the first ascents that I've done locally, I'll go and repeat them because they'll be next to something else that I want to do, and then I'll be like, oh man, I actually remember this feeling, like so limit, like challenging, like barely pulled the top out. And then it's like the next time I'm in that zone and I do it, and I'm like, wow, am I even sure about that? That's the correct grade of this is, you know, it's like the difference. It's more apparent with the video footage.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if we've actually mentioned yet, but Seven lives in Montana, and he built his own house out in the woods. It's completely off grid, and really into new routing, and like you know really working your way up to becoming one of the best climbers in Montana, really making a name for yourself. So yeah, I mean, I think like just kind of being in a situation like that, often it often means that new routing is the way that the kind of route that you end up going down. So yeah, I think that's another thing that me and Seven share, is that we're both very, very motivated for new routes.
I've heard that called like growth mindset. I was trying to remember what my sports psych called it. And it's like, and it's growth mindset versus like a fixed mindset. And it sounds like both of you guys are like really good at the growth mindset of like trying harder things, or like that ambition that you talked about, Matt, or the positivity that you were talking about, Seven. I feel like both of those really tie into having a like healthy growth mindset.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah, I found a lot of success working with a sports psych. It was really nice for being able to put into words things that I feel like some that I did naturally well and some that I did naturally, you know, poorly. And so I found that really helpful as far as somebody like outside of the climbing world who gave a lot of mentorship. I mean, the therapist. So I guess you can count him as a mentor, I guess. But
I actually find that really interesting that you say that because, like, again, I actually also had some therapy a few years ago, and it was probably a little bit, I don't know if it was the same kind of therapy as what you got, but yeah, it really did actually change the way that I approached, just in terms of like how I actually, I guess just being kinder to myself, really, and just being a little bit more like, you know, just being a little bit more, what's the word that I'm looking for? I guess just kind of accepting myself for who I am a little bit more and working with myself a little bit easier. And that I think I was only able to do once I started getting therapy and kind of working through some past traumas and stuff. So yeah, it's really interesting, that is.
Maybe we'll like shift towards some bigger picture questions and look towards finding a natural end.
Yeah.
You've both talked a ton about how meaningful this mentorship and like two-way friendship relationship has been for you guys. And you've, I guess, already kind of said a lot of things that you've learned, but I wonder if there's any one idea or strategy or tool, I guess, that each of you have learned from each other, from your relationship. Yeah, what's the biggest thing, I guess, that you've taken away from the last year of working with each other, if you can pinpoint something?
For me, it's kind of like, I don't actually recall where I heard this, but it's something that I've like brought up a couple of times with Matt, and it's something that's stuck with me ever since I said it first time, is that you can do anything, you just can't do everything. So that is the one thing that like has stuck out from our like conversations. It's just like, sometimes we have a lot of projects going on and a lot of things that we're working on, a lot of things that are really important to us, and that time commitment to them. And like, it's like, oh, I'm kind of feeling scrambled and I have all these things I want to do. And it's like, okay, so I can do anything I want, but I can't do everything. What is the things that I want to do this moment in time? Because then it's like, if I show up there and I want to be there, then I'm exactly where I need to be at that moment in time. And it just, it takes away that pressure.
Yeah, totally. I guess I wanted to loop back on that with you too. It sounds like maybe one of the things that has been beneficial to you about working with Matt is just providing structure to your climbing. You talked before about having pieces of projects that you're always kind of working on, and maybe him guiding you towards a focus. And then also with the off-the-wall training, as you guys were talking about, just maybe being a little more intentional about those efforts. Does that sound accurate, that working with him has been maybe not a ton of like, yeah, things maybe you weren't doing before, but just providing that structure and that focus in some way?
Yeah, I think he consolidated my overactive brain and was able to like put a little bit more focus into the things that I found beneficial or that he thought would be beneficial as well.
Yeah. What's it called? I was just going to say, like, Seven definitely helped me learn how to knee bar. He gave me a tip on Harambe it was maybe about a month ago. And he was like, man, have you tried like taping your knee pads? And I was like, you know, I kind of felt like, no, I don't need to tape my knee pads. It's not going to help me. Like, that's kind of how I thought of it before. And then when Seven suggested it, I was like, maybe there's a reason why people tape their knee pads. And then I did. And then lo and behold, it made the problem way easier. So but yeah, that was something that Seven suggested. So I actually should fully credit Seven for the simple fact that I almost climbed Harambe. I actually, Bosey messaged me like a week ago and was like, no, you didn't do it properly, because I didn't do some like contrived end bit that he did. But but anyway, I'm going to go and do it properly sometime. Yeah, it's just, what's it called? Yeah, it's just kind of weird because like, he's added that, like this kind of like, it's like a AB plus a V14, and then there's like a V6, V7, 7A plus N bit that he added on. I kind of thought he just did it for a laugh almost, like, because he could. I didn't think he actually legitimately wanted the problem to go that way. So what's it called? Apparently you did, so I've now got to climb the 8B plus again to add the 7A.
Well, you technically did a new route then, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a new route.
Yeah, you can call it an FA, right?
Yeah.
Getting into the ethics of climbing.
Yeah, yeah. But no, yeah, like the thing is, I do get it from both his perspective. Like, you know, that's where he, his vision of the line, that's where he wanted it to go. And it's my duty to respect that as you know, making a repetition. So, you know, I've got to respect Will's wishes with that. So I am going to go back and repeat it. But anyway, yeah, 7 really helped me climb the hard bit of the boulder. So that's the main thing.
And I learned it from a YouTube video of Bill Ramsey climbing like a 14B. Like the video was like 12 years old. And he's just spraying his knee down and then taping up at the clear light cave. And I'm just like, why? You know? And then I came across a boulder that I was working on last year that my knee pad kept on slipping because the temps were a little bit warm. And I was like, you know, screw it. I'm going to bring out the duct tape. And I duct taped the top of it. And it seemed to just make all the difference. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's why. Because it
works. That's why people do it.
I get stuck in like a contrarian attitude occasionally where I'm like, I don't need to do that. Like people are just crazy, you know? And then I won't try something and eventually I'll break down my ego and try it and be like, oh man, I should have done that from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
So I totally Common relate experience. To that.
Oh, that's so funny. We've all been there. Like, yeah, sometimes you just waste like weeks trying something and it's like, well, you knew the answer like before you, like weeks ago, but you just didn't even try it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where having a mentor who you trust, I think, you know, can be so helpful because like I've definitely had coaches or, you know, other mentors who were just, you know, not the best, I guess. And so I would rebel against their advice, I think. And so then that just became a habit. And so now when I get good advice, I think I have a habit of not wanting to listen to it. So I tend to be kind of hard to coach, I think, but I'm working on it. It's something that I've been working on with myself because it obviously only hurts me in the long run.
Yeah, I guess it must be quite different for ladies because, like, you know, like it's so often that men will just kind of like walk up to women and just be like, you know, you know, like whatever, like do this, do that, and it's like it must just get really tiring, like listening to people just kind of like tell you what to do all the time, and it, like even though you're probably way better than them as well, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, I could imagine that, like that. That almost just causes like a bit of an internal reaction where every time somebody gives you advice, it must almost be like a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah, one of the funniest bits of advice, just because you reminded me of it here, is that I had somebody, you know, way back when I was probably like 18 or something, tell me I should drink a bunch of beer to put on weight and then have a natural weight vest.
Oh, wow.
And I think he was being at least semi-serious. And I was like, I think I want to do that for like a number of reasons.
Maybe I should give that a go.
That's insane.
I know, it's so funny. But that just reminded me of that fun little tidbit from my past.
That wins worst piece of advice ever.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like being in climbing centers with my fiance Anna. She's an amazing climber. And what's it called? It's just like, I just find it really crazy. There's some people that just kind of like go up to us sometimes and try and give her advice. I'm just like, she's like way better than you. Like, what is going on through your head? It's like, you know, it must be, I don't know. Yeah. Pointing back to definitely still a slightly misogynistic culture in the UK.
Yeah. Here too.
Yeah. I think we're definitely guilty of that in the US as well. Well, I feel like we're approaching a kind of natural end. You guys are super easy to talk to. I feel like this could go on for forever. So, which is not a bad thing. But maybe we could like maybe end with a question of, I think sometimes people maybe have a little bit of hesitation, like reaching out to a coach or trying to find a mentor. So I guess, what was it for you, Seven? You mentioned that YouTube video that you watched that made you excited to work with Matt. But was there something else that really made you want to reach out to like actually make take the leap of getting a coach for yourself?
Yeah, I really just needed somebody to like tell me that it was okay the way the my life was heading, you know, because it's like climbing has encompassed every single aspect of it since I started. And people around here, there's not really that many people that are like as dedicated to like advancement in the sport like I am. And it's just really hard to kind of not really hard to stay motivated, but just know that there's other people that are out there doing the same thing and it's perfectly okay. So then reaching out to Matt, I'm grateful that we have, and I think that I have learned a lot from this relationship. It's been very symbiotic, I believe. So I think that was probably the first reason why I reached out, is because I just didn't really have anybody that was looking to progress the ways that I am in my own climbing.
Yeah. I think interestingly, a lot of I don't think this is the case for Seven in the slightest, but I think for a lot of people, they often kind of assume that hiring a coach is going to solve all their climbing issues. And I think it is just like interesting what Seven says. It's like a symbiotic relationship. It's, you know, bounces back and forth, and you know, a coach learns from the client and the client learns from the coach, and it kind of bounces back and forth. And I think, like, because of that, people maybe shouldn't worry too much about hiring a coach. They should just maybe just worry a little bit more about who they go for with a coach, because the most important thing with a coach is that you need to be, you know, like on a similar page, but you also, you know, you can't be like exactly on the same page, because otherwise you just won't learn anything. But I think you need to at least like think on a similar line, I think, and just be able to relate to each other to some degree for it to work.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, not to make it more dramatic than it needs to be, but it sounds like you guys have, you know, you not only found Seven a coach, but also community, which in my opinion is like one of the more beautiful things that mentors can offer, is like a feeling of belonging to the bigger community. And Matt, too, you mentioned you guys are buddies, you know, and like, yeah, you really connect with Seven in a way that you don't with everybody in the climbing community. And so having kind of a similar approach and like philosophy about climbing, it sounds like, has been one of the reasons it's been really enjoyable for you guys to work together.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if I had two options, either go and move to Sheffield and live in the heart of the UK climbing scene, or go to Montana and live with his 17 dogs and live out in the woods, I would choose living out with Seven with the 17 dogs. And yeah, I guess that's why me and Seven gel really well, because we do like just the way that we are, the way that we approach life is very similar. And maybe like people that are into more kind of like, you know, following trends and being a bit more like kind of like a normal person, they might prefer going to somebody like Dave Mason. So I think it's just about choosing the coach that you relate to. I think that really is so important.
I agree.
Yeah. I feel like the other thing a coach can really provide, and I'm honestly, like, your relationship sounds like it provides this, is that mutual psych for each other as well. Like, you know, it's easy enough to be psyched for yourself on something that you do, but being able to share that with somebody and know that they care about it, I think, is so cool. And that's something that I know I missed a lot when I didn't have a like a coach or somebody to really share it with. I would share it with my parents, because they were the people I could share it with. You know, right. Like, I climbed this climb today. They didn't know what I was talking about, but it was nice to have somebody who like bounced back the psych. And it sounds like you guys have that, and that it's maybe been something that you've potentially struggled with in the past, Matt, with like some sounds like shitty situations that came up. And so maybe having somebody like that too, who's just like a positive wall to bounce off of, is kind of cool.
Oh yeah, totally. Like I kind of feel like all I kind of need in life is just my coaching clients, my fiance Anna, who I love so much, and just, you know, like just this kind of like lovely little culture that I've got up in Scotland at the moment. And, you know, like that I'm very happy. It's really awesome. So yeah, sorry, I don't know where that was.
No, that's awesome.
Going back, yeah.
Well, sweet, guys. Yeah, thanks so much.
Ah, wicked.
It was really great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys taking the time. It was really fun to get to know you both.
Yeah, this was fun.
Thanks so much, guys. Honestly, really good fun.
All right,
cool.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Keep your eyes peeled for more mentorship sessions, which this is one of a many-part series of. And we were really excited to have Matt and Seven participate, because their entire relationship was honestly just really inspiring and really cool to hear about.
Yeah, totally. If you were inspired to work with Matt as a coach, you can find him on Instagram. His handle is Matt Wright Climber. Matt is spelled with just one T, so MATWRIGHT Climber. And he also has a website, mattwrightcoaching.com if you're interested in working with him.
Yeah. Everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Keep your eyes peeled for more mentorship sessions.